This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Hola, everyone, and welcome to another minisode of She Builds Charrettes. Before we start, if this is your first time listening to She Builds podcast, or if you have not heard episodes 37 and 38, Lena Bobardi Part 1 and 2, I suggest you stop right now and listen to those. The reason I say that is because Charrette episodes are bonus episodes, and this particular one will cover the story of how Lena Bobardi chose the site of the Museum of Art Sao Paulo, or MASPI. So if you're not familiar with Lena's story or the museum, you won't enjoy this episode as much as you would otherwise. In fact, what you're about to hear is an outtake of episode 38 that was edited only to keep episode 38 from being over an hour. For those of you that checked all the boxes and are still listening, get ready to learn about what Lena went through when securing the site for the museum. Remember that when the museum started, there wasn't a specific building for it yet. So it happened living in the floors of a newspaper building as Assis Chateaubriand, Pietro Bardi, and Lena acquired art for the museum. I would call it a glorified storage space, but it really was more than that, so don't quote me on that. It was a museum. And also remember that the site where the standalone museum was eventually built on had written on the lease that whatever was built there could not restrict the ground plane views of the park. That was very important. Okay. Last but not least, I apologize in advance for mispronouncing the acronym of the museum. The correct way to say it would be MASPI. All right, here's the show. You know what, guys? Before we move away from this building, I want to tell you guys the story of how she chose the site, because it's kind of interesting. Actually, I really wish we could read the entire interview because it's a little bit nutty. You can hear her personality. Like, she tells her story like I tell a story, just like broken up and with weird tangents. And I just loved it. Is it legal for me to do that? Like, to read off of a magazine and just make a whole episode of that?
I don't know, but I'm down for a reenactment of sorts.
Ask for forgiveness, not permission? Yeah. Let me tell you about how Lena picked the site for this museum.
Yes, please. Sim, por favor.
Okay. So like we talked about a long, long time ago, the museum was being temporarily housed in a few floors of a newspaper's headquarters. One day, Pietro had to go on a bunch of trips, and he left Lena in charge of MASP. And Lena was sick of where the museum was at. She wanted to give it a building of its own. Coincidentally, around the same time, she learned of plans to build a museum at Trianon Park, but it was rejected because the design had lots of columns that was automatically out because it blocked the views.
Again, restrictive covenants. They're no joke.
No, they are not. Then the city started planning to put public toilets there, and Lena thought, and I quote, "It's not possible."
Wait a quack minute. I just want to know, where did the idea of public toilets come from when they had decided a museum might not work? Like, I don't know.
Oh, we can't do a museum. I guess we got to put a toilet here.
Yeah, why is that option B?
Right? I feel like we're missing some steps. Like, you could have done a school. Oh, you could have done a parking building. Toilets.
Girls, you know how bureaucracy is. It makes no sense. So maybe the nephew of somebody sold toilets. I don't know. Well, so when Lena was like, heck no, don't do that. The guy that worked for the city was like, do you have a better idea? That's not a direct quote, but. And Lena said, duh. Listen, if the governor says yes to my museum, which will not block any views because I know how to read a lease.
Mm-hmm.
I will support his candidate.
Channel your inner Lena.
I will support his candidacy for president. And my support means the support of dozens of newspapers and radio stations.
Oh, there's some quid pro quo happening. Mm-hmm. Political intrigue. This is turning into like some House of Cards stuff.
For real. But Nerjadi, how did Lena pull so much political influence with media like that?
Because Assis Chateaubriand owned Diarios Asociados, which consisted of 34 newspapers, 36 radio stations, 18 television stations, and many magazines. And Lena thought she could convince Assis that it was in the interest of MASP to support the governor.
I need to borrow her book of persuasion because this sounds like a tall order.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm feeling as much of a connection, but I believe in Lena.
Well, long story short, Lena gets a meeting with the governor the next day. She pulls an all-nighter getting a presentation together. And the governor picks up what Lena's putting down. Great success.
Okay. Ooh. I would like to be a witness of what was going on in these 24 to 48 hours when all of this transpired. Like, how? How?
Yeah.
How?
I want to have been in the room where it happened.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. For real.
After that, Lena went to tell Assis and Pietro. And Assis said that the only one that could make a decision like that was the director, Pietro. Pietro was already working out another deal to have the museum somewhere else. So he told her, and I quote, "It's a beautiful female dream." And Lena was like, "Patronize someone else, you poop face," and left.
Female dream.
Yeah, what?
Quack.
Sir.
Quack. Quack, quack. Quack, quack. I could tell you where they could put those public toilets now.
The Slytherin's coming out.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I feel like Lena would have been a Slytherin, too.
Maybe. Well, later she cooled down and she told Pietro, "Look, MASP is obviously going nowhere. So I'm going to leave you to that and I'm going to go work at the museum in Bahia."
Wait, so she just gave up? That doesn't sound very Lena.
Yeah, because obviously he done lost his quack mind and she had other things to do. Be sure to listen to part one for the background on that museum, though.
That's true. Well, listen to this. 3 weeks later, Pietro sends her a letter, and guess what he said? They were laying the first stone of MASP in the Trianon Park, and they would have a public ceremony, and he wanted her to come back for that. And that's how Lena got the last laugh with her female dream.
Listen, Did he at least give her credit and he realized the error of his ways, or did he steal her idea and take credit?
No, I think he probably shared the credit with her.
I have no words. Quack, quack.
And that's the end of today's charrette. Thank you so much for listening. Please let us know what you thought of our show. We really value your input and feedback. If you like our show, tell your friends, your museum curators, lease writers, give us 5 stars on iTunes, write us a review. This really helps us spread the word and the stories of the wonderful ladies to more people. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a comment on our website, shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on Twitter at shebuildspod. Until then, ciao!
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.